The following program is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. I'm Kurt Benrud. Welcome to Science Fiction Shorts, brought to you by a team of volunteer readers. Our program will be available in podcast after the initial broadcast.
This is Kim Stamegna, The Last Day by Margaret Langendorf. Florenza Casotella wouldn't leave for a trip without scrubbing the walls of the shower, vacuuming the front carpet, and remaking the bed. No exceptions. Who wants to return to dirty sheets or a filthy bath? No one, that too. But Ma, we're not coming home. We have to go now. It's an evacuation, her son protests as Florenza pulled on rubber gloves. He tried to get her to look at his phone at the official notification of evacuation, which his father had forwarded 2 hours ago. And how did his mother react? She ignored him. So maybe her son was right, and she wouldn't return. But someone else might, and they wouldn't find that Florenza Bernadella Casotella left this house, her home of 30 years, anything but shipshape. Her daughter, watching this exchange, divined her mother's train of thought. Ma, it's a planetary evacuation. Everyone's leaving. No one will see this room ever again. Please listen. They'll leave us if you don't go. Ernesto Casotello, who learned a thing or two in 27 years of marriage to Florenza, shook his head at his children. He loved them dearly, of course, but they were making a simple thing complicated, like they used to do when they were teenagers. And here, as young adults, they were at it again. We must go slow to go fast, children. She has her way, he told them. But, Dad, his son protested, if she's going to clean the whole house, she should have started yesterday. Florenza kept scrubbing, ignoring these people who, in her opinion, were acting like they were raised by wild pigs instead of God-fearing Catholics who put an entire scene out in the front yard every year. Shame on them! You kids go on ahead, Ernesto said, making a shooing motion. I'll see to Mama. He handed his son a small envelope that appeared to contain a hotel room key for the La Quinta Inn and gave him a look that discouraged further conversation. Ernesto opened the cleaning supply closet and got out the mop. Talking was over. Bewildered, but with no other choice, the brother and sister grabbed their backpacks and left. They walked through streets that bustled with organized chaos. Specific evacuees must report to specific places at specific times. Correct identification must be present. No one wanted riots and looting leading to eventual standoffs and martial law. Keep calm and carry your own bag. Do you think she's going to get left here? Yes, answered her brother, and Dad's decided to stay with her. She's so crazy. What can we do? Her tone was flippant, but the frown on her face mirrored her brother's worried expression. He won't leave her. That's the way it is. Arriving at their designated evacuation location, Florence's children were puzzled. They looked around. Signs hanging on street posts lent the place an air of readiness, but the intersection was completely empty. Instead of the crowds they expected, there wasn't a soul in sight. A sign that read, last name A through E, hung on a wall next to a huge copy of the evacuation order. They scrutinized it and compared it to the one on their phones. The two were identical. The siblings looked around again, baffled. Until a second inspection revealed one small difference. The date on the notice, forwarded by their father, was one day earlier than the date on the wall. Florence's son laughed first, joined by his sister as the truth dawned on her. Laughter mingled with relief. Dad knew Mama so well. Go slow to go fast indeed. He changed the date, she said to her brother as they crossed the street to the La Quinta Inn where their father had considerately booked them a room. Come on, I'll buy you a beer. Beat scrubbing the shower on our last night here, he said. Amazingly, not for everyone. She shook her head and they linked arms and headed straight into the hotel bar.
My name is Melanie Simmons, and I'll be reading a story called So Far Faithful by Sarah Canning. I walked to the patch of bare earth at the edge of the grounds and began the slow, fluid movements of the Yang long form, my body remembering its 108 precise actions, each flowing into the next. The full cycle takes nearly 20 minutes. I have no recollection of where or how I learned them. That memory is lost. Probably forever, but the movements are there, distilled into my muscles, grounding and calming me with their eternal flow of form and emptiness, echoing the blue-black ocean crashing into the tumbled seawall far below. The view is good, even as seen through a 12-foot fence. Overkill for a rest home, I explained to the rocks and spray below. Even a rest home for incorrigibles like me. Aggrandizing self-talk, Mina. Minus 2 points. New sanity score, 15. The voice came from a squat steel cube that crouched on its miniature tank tread 2 yards from my feet. Damn, I hadn't realized that I'd spoken that last part out loud. Now I'd have to spend the afternoon acting reasonable to avoid being confined to corners for dinner by my robotic nanny. The thing looked like nothing so much as a benevolently sentient laundry hamper. Japanese, of course. Its brand name, which I only remember because I can read it on the side of the device, is Cheerful Friend. They use them here to keep an eye on their more troublesome patients. Yes, I am troublesome, apparently. My captors say that I was a member of a cell of political dissidents who tried and failed to overthrow the government. That was in 2033, 40 years ago. They say that when I was captured, certain triggers embedded deep in my psyche broke crucial connections in my memory, making me unable to betray my friends to the enemy, no matter what methods they used, brutal or subtle, to compel them out of me. The blocks aren't complete. I can still recall my childhood in almost perfect detail, and college in bits and pieces, but I have no memories at all of the next 7 years after that. It's as though someone forgot to press record in my head. I've been shown pictures of myself laughing, or smoking, or waiting at a stoplight in a car. I don't ever remember smoking. I wonder if some of the photos are doctored. They may as well be stills from a movie scene, with the rest of the cast as much strangers to me as I am to myself. The block was thought to be irreversible, though they tried like hell to reverse it in the early years of my incarceration. Now, 40 years on, I'm developing symptoms of dementia, so my current doctor captor has taken an interest in me. He hopes the disease will dislodge my repressed memories, but so far it doesn't look good for him. It's more likely that the disease will progress until his pink piggy face is the only one I recognize, the only one I remember. I may even forget that I loathe him. But there's no need to dwell on that while I'm lucid, and when I'm not lucid, I can't dwell on anything. I bow to the sea below me, and a word fluttered just out of my reach, the word people say to each other at the end of Tai Chi practice. I told myself it would come to me later, then went to find my friend Craig and earn back some points. Craig was kneeling next to a long row of plants in the garden, wiping his seamed brow with the back of one grimy gardening glove. His thatch of short white hair bristled. A trowel dangled from his other hand, and gardening implements were piled in the basket attached to his walker. Namaste, I said, feeling ridiculously pleased at remembering the word at last. Then, need any help? He squinted up at me. Can you tell a weed from a pepper plant? Sure. You're hired. He nodded down the next row where shoots of grass and dandelions were rioting in amongst the peppers. My robot nanny delivered a trowel to me with a click and whir of approval, or at least a recalculated sanity score. Soon I had dirt under my nails and a small pile of uprooted weeds beside me. So how are you doing these days, Craig? I finally asked after I'd weeded for a few feet. All right. His voice was guarded, his gaze flickering over to my impassive unit. His sat at the other end of the row, and a human orderly was lounging on a park bench nearby. Humans, robots, or both, they were always there, always listening. If you aren't crazy when you first get here, they'll fix that, we say when we're willing to risk the demerits by saying it out loud. Craig had gotten close scrutiny from our monitors lately because of the incident in the dining hall. One of the orderlies had gotten too close to him and was suddenly airborne, crashing into a table. Sweet, docile Craig, a white-haired octogenarian, was bellowing like a bull, raging, swinging his walker around like a weapon. I saw his nanny bot jab him with a needle, then felt a sting on my own thigh and sank into whiteness. I might have thought it was a dream, except that since then, the staff gives Craig a wide berth, relying on the machines to wrangle him. I wanted to ask him why he'd done it, but there was no way to do it without getting docked points, and he didn't have the points to spare. So I kept the conversation carefully neutral. "I hear there's apple pie tonight," I said. "Yeah, that's good. Worth going to dinner for that. I'll save you a seat if you like. Thanks." We finished up our rows and gave the tools back to our keepers. 3 points each, socializing and occupational therapy. We both laughed, embarrassed. At least they didn't announce your sanity score when other inmates were in earshot. It was thought to be unnecessarily humiliating. In old folks' homes, there are more than enough necessary humiliations to go around. I went back to my room. It is depressing in its blandness. Like everything else here, it's designed to prevent mishaps. The window blinds have breakaway cords, there isn't so much as a letter opener in the desk drawer, and all sharp edges on the furniture have been smoothed away. The bedsheets are disposable and designed to tear like tissue paper under a load of more than 5 or 10 pounds. Even if I didn't have my own nanny bot following me every waking moment and crouching on its base in my room as I sleep, recharging but still watchful, like a napping house cat, I am always in full view of at least one security camera, and human attendants are only 30 to 60 seconds away at all times. "Meds," the robot announced, and I dutifully shuffled to the sink, got a glass of water, and swallowed the handful of pills the robot spat out onto a little tray for me. It made me think of baby birds accepting regurgitated meals from their mother. I stifled a laugh. The robots did not understand humor and viewed it with suspicion. I would say this makes them less than sentient, but the human orderlies here don't understand humor either. I didn't have to stay in my tediously safe room very long, because the robot stirred and said, "Time to see Dr. Mills," and trundled out the door on its little treads, leaving me to follow it in its wake. When the weather's good, the doctor likes to meet me on the facility grounds, where 2 park benches sit facing each other. I brought my notebook with me so I wouldn't have to look at the way his jowly, florid cheeks push his blue eyes into the narrow slits behind small, wire-rimmed spectacles, or the perspiration darkening his pale hair. Instead, I looked at my notebook, or the ground, or the green golf shirt stretched tight over his pot belly. After inquiring about my health, he got right down to business. "Mina, can you tell me the name of your college roommate?" I drew a rough cartoon, a blank circle for a head with 2 curved lines to indicate a neck and shoulders. "Which one?" I had 3. "The first one." I shaded in the featureless head and tried to dredge up a name. She always made me think of Anne of Green Gables, earnest like that. And there's a smell of cinnamon. Maybe she was a redhead? He leaned forward expectantly. A single blonde chest hair peeked out of his open collar. Was she in the student protest group? I laughed. I have no idea. I think she liked white wine spritzers. My memories are solid from childhood through high school, Swiss cheese from there through my junior year, and a blank wall after that. Fine. When was the attack supposed to happen? I don't know, I said. I set the notebook aside and brushed a speck of dirt off my loose white cotton smock. Funny that they dress the patients more like doctors than the doctors in this place. I don't even know if there was supposed to be an attack. What day of the week? He pressed. I don't know. I picked up my stubby felt tip again and rapped it hard on the pad. What about the time? Sunrise? Dusk? Midnight? The urgency in his voice made me look up. A fine mist of perspiration gleamed on his upper lip. I squeezed the felt tip tightly in my hand. I don't know. It was an effort to keep my voice level and calm. If I wasn't calm, though, my cheerful friend might roll in and tranquilize me just to be on the safe side. But can you picture in your mind, he said, just a flicker, maybe, or an impression, like your roommate and the smell of cinnamon? No, I said, there's nothing. It was nearly true. There may have been something, but I wasn't sure what it was, and I wasn't about to tell him about it. I am physically incapable of remembering, I said, stressing each syllable. You know that. Why bother with all this? He shrugged. The arrogant smirk under his stubby nose made him look more like a pig than ever. We're getting further. The drugs are helping. You will remember. It's been 40 years. Look at me. I hold out my arms as evidence. The flesh on them wasted, the skin flabby. For some reason, this makes the doctor chuckle. What does this matter? Why don't you leave me alone? People want the truth. Don't you think they deserve it? You could be vindicated or condemned, which already happened a long time ago. He leaned back against the park bench and draped an arm casually over the back of it. All the more reason to keep my mouth shut, I said, and my mind. I remembered the arrest and my holding cell, but not a trial or prison or being transferred to this place, although they showed me documents, photographs, recordings. He waved the idea away like an irritating insect. They're all dead, Mina. All those people you're still trying to protect 40 years later. Dead, or in places like this, with holes cut out of their memories, waiting to die. You can't save them, or help them. You don't need to protect them anymore. I began drawing in a brick wall behind the blank-faced person on my notebook. And you don't need my confession anymore, so why bother? You know there are the medical ramifications to consider. He leaned forward again, and his face took on a kindly, paternal look, though he was at least 15 years younger than I. Others want to remember and can't. You can help many more who struggle with all kinds of psychological trauma, and a breakthrough could improve your care here. I snorted. I'm an old woman. I have grown old in your care, if you want to call it that. Let somebody else help the amnesiacs and trauma victims. Let the dead bury their own dead. As I spoke, I saw something slip out of his pocket and drop soundlessly onto the grass. A pen. A real one. A ballpoint with a metal barrel. Not the felt-dip pens they issue patients here. You aren't dead yet, Mina. No, I suppose not. Who knew for sure? This place has all the marks of a highly personal purgatory, a place to expiate one's sins, and my memory loss leaves me unmoored in time, vulnerable. Sometimes I look down and see my body as a corpse, or devoured by extreme age, my arms and legs sticks. Sometimes in dreams I am 30, the age I was when they took me, with nothing more than a scattering of gray in my hair as harbingers. I can tell they are dreams because the doctor is there and utterly changed by any passage of time. He's always in his 50s, the age he is now, slightly gone to seed, the perfect age of paternal authority. Only I am indifferent, young again, with muscle restored to my hands and arms. I can never see my own face. There are no mirrors anywhere here, awake or dreaming. But my breathing is easy and painless, and the dozen small aches and twinges of age are gone. Sometimes I dream I am back in the cell where they questioned me after I was first captured. I remember the walls painted white, the fluorescent lights buzzing 24 hours a day. The lights were hung 10 feet up with protective grills bolted on so I couldn't smash them. I watched the pen fall from the doctor's pocket onto the grass, and remembered a dream I had the night before. I was strapped down in the white room. They forced open my jaws to accept a rigid plastic mouthpiece that scraped my gums as the doctor shoved it in. There was a paste smeared in it, bitter herbs mixed with the coppery taste of my own blood. I wanted to gag, but was flat on my back, and the mouthpiece had straps which an orderly secured around my head. So I breathed and tried to say, "Stay calm," instead. I could twist my head a bare inch to the left and saw foamy green flecks of drool hit the pillow. And then, time and time, and time out of mind. Give me back my withered flesh, my sparse white hair. I don't want this burden of memory. Give me 2073, not 2033. Inside this dream I can remember, waiting, walking, the night streets shining with rain. My palms are hot. Am I waiting for my lover to call? For the signal to post my report? For the right time to press a detonator switch? The street is empty because it's 10 minutes before curfew. I have something someone wants. There's to be an exchange. My gait is a young woman's, my stride confident. My bones are strong. I won't lose my balance, and even if I fell, I wouldn't shatter a hip. If the shops weren't all closed, I'd buy a coffee and a newspaper, maybe cigarettes to keep me company. No, I was never much of a smoker. But a little light and heat would be welcome here on the night pavement. Someone is coming. If I had a cigarette, I would stub it out now. I will not look at my contact's face or even notice whether it's a man or a woman. Safer that way for both of us. Agitation surrounds me suddenly, buzzing in the air like angry insects. A gloved hand reaches out to take what I have come to offer. Then I fall through time again, back to the park, trying not to stare at a simple ballpoint pen lying among the grass blades. The doctor fidgeted on his park bench. "You're doing great, Mina. I think you're making real progress." I could still taste the bitter herbs in my mouth. "Salvia," I said. "What?" His eyeglasses flashed in the sunlight. "I have a taste in my mouth, right now. It's salvia." "Interesting." He made a note in my chart, redundant since the robot captured and transcribed every word we uttered. "Did you take salvia often when you were younger?" "Oh, no. But I had to stop there because I didn't know how I knew the taste of salvia." He patted my arm, smiling at me in my skinny, sexless body. "You'll remember sometime." He smiled his most unctuous smile and left. "You know, I don't believe I will." I managed to refrain from saying it out loud. In the robot's constant presence, I might as well whisper in the doctor's ear. I had to be very careful. There were dandelions, weeds growing right up by the bench where the doctor had been sitting. Brave things in this sanitized, regulated place. I picked a few for my room, scooping up the pen at the same time. I hoped unobserved. Just an ordinary ballpoint, but it was heavy in my hand. Dangerous. It could make so much possible. Sometimes I dream I'm young again, and so is everyone else. Craig is shuffling around in his bathrobe and slippers, still hunched over and pushing his walker. But his forearms are the size of my calves, and he's 2 inches taller and only 40 years old, not 80. I want to shout, "You're young!" But I know I mustn't. The robots are still here, and they never change. never stop listening, watching. Lately, I haven't been able to tell waking from dreaming. The states overlap and intersperse. A symptom of my dementia, they say. My young hand grasps the edge of the bench while I talk to the doctor, but I feel the weight of years bending my back. You can return in your mind, the doctor has told me. You can be that young woman again and remember. Remember your friends, your lovers, your plans, and dreams. You can have it all back. It's the drugs that will provide this miracle. And I can see that they will work eventually. I have already caught glimpses of faces, the angle of a jaw, remembered a single word. It's starting to come back. That's why now, tonight, I have to commit this most antisocial of acts. I finger the doctor's shiny ballpoint. I have gotten an idea as I flitted back and forth between 2033 and 2073, dreaming and waking, as my flesh has sloughed and reformed like soil enriched and eroded by the flooding of the Nile. I have gotten the notion that it may be 2073, or it may actually be 2033. Maybe my friends are still alive and endangered by my returning memories. What better way to bypass the blocks in my memory than to bore holes through them with drugs and convince me that it's all irrelevant now anyway? Nothing to save, nothing to protect, just the rambling collections of an old woman. Since there is no way for me to know for sure whether it's 2073 or 2033, I'm afraid I won't be able to provide the doctor with the footnotes to history he so desires. Especially since I'm not entirely sure whether my history has actually played out yet. Although my memory is confused, I know, and I do not know how I know, the precise angle and force needed for a single strike to my own inner thigh, the femoral artery, then a second strike to the throat, the trachea. I have this one chance, the pen. This one weapon left to me. My arm muscle twitches. I will know what to do. To my unrecollected revolutionaries, loves, and friends, adieu. I remain yours, so far faithful.
You've been listening to Science Fiction Shorts on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm Kurt Benrud. My team of volunteer readers and I thank you for listening in. And we would love to have you join us next time. Just a quick reminder, this program is available in podcast, and it is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call. As always, our number is 832-5138, and that's 919-832-5138. If you're a fan of sci-fi and have something to say, we want to hear from you.